Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
We're back, quarter number three of the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network, KeystoneSportsNetwork.com, and the Keystone Sports app. He's Jim Galante. I'm Dustin Hawkinsmith. We're talking Penn State-Memphis in the Cotton Bowl. Penn State closes the season 11-2 with a 53-39 win. A game where they racked up 396 yards on the ground, recognized eventually the advantage they had in the ground game, and everybody got in on the act. Journey Brown, 202 yards. Noah Kane with 92. Ricky Slade with 58. They averaged as a team 7.5 yards per carry. Really dominant performance there, eventually taking over this game where some nervous moments early. Coming to you, by the way, from our usual spot in the Labatt Blue studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light, Bleed Blue and White, Drink Blue and Lights. So a lot of good things here. We talked about the pass defense a bit, and, you know, we're trying to look at this game and try to figure out, you know, is it a springboard into 2020? And there are some things to iron out from a pass defense perspective, probably from a personnel point of view and from an approach point of view. How can they eliminate these gash plays, or are these just going to be standard operating procedure? The other part of it was, you know, time management, and it's something that, you know, you can, maybe it's nitpicking, I don't know, but a lot of fans are still saying, why are you, and at the end of the first half, why are you calling timeout with 56 seconds left on a third and goal? I mean, anybody would recognize that, okay, you got a temporary play caller. You want to try to get the call right, but it doesn't really excuse calling the timeout when they called the timeout.
Right. If you want to use clock, which they should have at that point in the game, let the play clock run down, and the game clock, let it run down, and then call your timeout. There's nothing wrong with doing that, and it always made me wonder. I realize in the heat of battle on the sidelines, it's a little bit tougher because you've got a lot of things going on. But one of my pet peeves is you see time mismanagement, not just at Penn State. As Penn State fans, which I'm one of, we think it's only our team that does this. But you see it everywhere. You see it in the NFL even. And I don't understand why there's so much staff, why there isn't one guy standing right next to the head coach who's able to say, wait, James, don't call the timeout yet. We could let the clock run down first.
The clock guy, yeah.
Yeah, just have someone, that's their job, that's their role, because sitting at home, we see this happening. I don't know why, and I haven't heard anybody talk about it, that James Franklin commented on it. I didn't hear it. We're going to have some quotes from him, and I don't think it was addressed anywhere, but I don't think there's any excuse for that.
It would seem, and I'll pose the question again. As a football coach, is that something you either have or you don't? Or should that be something that gets better with time? You know, you see, you know, I think Andy Reid in the NFL is one of the most, you know, one of the most glaring examples is that he is a genius. He's a football genius. But when it comes to the nitty gritty of making those, you know, micro decisions in games, he's been notoriously bad at it. He's a guy who over the course of his career has not improved a whole lot in that area. And it's, I don't know. I hesitate, I guess, to get overly critical because I don't ultimately know what I'm talking about. I've never been in James Franklin's shoes. I've never been in a college football coach's shoes where you're trying to assess a lot of information at the same time. And try to make these decisions on the fly. And it's easier to second guess them than it is to make them. I recognize all that. But at the same time, it's something that we've discussed probably too often on this show. And throughout James Franklin's tenure here, there's been a lot of iffy choices, I think.
Right. And I don't want to use the, you're paid a lot of money to make these decisions, but, and you ask the question, can you get better at it? And I believe you can. I think experience is a good teacher. I would like to think that kind of situation at the end of a half, I believe they called the timeouts because new play caller, this was an important point of the game. They wanted to make sure they got it right. And by the way, they did.
Yeah.
They got it right. And, you know, kudos for that. I think they were better off calling a timeout than not and not being organized. But you also have to look at it like, hey, wait a minute. There was no excuse for not using up more of the clock. Could I use this, though, to segue into a more positive aspect of the game? On the play where they did score the touchdown, it was Jahan Dotson. And did you see who made the great block for him to open him up?
You're going to have to refresh me.
Pat Freiermuth.
Yeah.
All right. Just laid the guy out. Dotson was wide open because of that block. And that leads me to Pat Freiermuth, who is a beast. He only caught two passes, but the run after the catch, both instances, he ran people over.
He almost killed a guy, I think.
I think so.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Is that just as a Penn State fan and, you know, if you want to be the cranky old man, like these guys aren't tough the way they were. Well, yes, they are. Just watch Pat Freiermuth play. Oh, my goodness. And again, I'll talk about this as a fan. That is so exciting. He catches the ball, what, 3, 4, 5 yards downfield and then runs somebody over. That's as exciting as any deep pass. I loved it.
Yeah, I thought just in general, and Journey Brown set the tone with that first run of the game where he, you know, there's about 6 guys where it's just like, get off me. I think Penn State really set out to beat up Memphis in this game and take every opportunity to do that and to kind of show your might kind of thing. And I think a lot of guys took some ownership of that. And that Pat Freiermuth run after catch was a pretty good example too. You know, like, all right, little boy, this is a man's game right now. And we're the grown men here, and we're going to show that we're the grown men. I thought that was just cool all around. And it was just, you can call it a throwback, I guess, but Penn State, everybody bought into, we're just going to beat these guys up.
Yes.
We're going to beat them up. And they did.
And we often get on the offensive line, you know, through the, not just this year, but through the years. But you don't run for that number of yards without the offensive line doing some really good work. I think, especially in the middle, Michael Mennett had a wonderful game. There were plays, some of the holes he and Gonzalez, I believe, also did a good job. They just opened up huge holes. Yes, the running backs have to take advantage of it, but you know, we've seen, even with the, I think, the greatest running back on the planet, Saquon Barkley, if you're not opening some kind of hole for him, so it's just not going to happen. So even though we spent at least a segment and a half being Debbie Downers, there were some really good things to see. And, is there not a chance that that new offensive coordinator was watching this game, licking his chops, saying, I got a lot to work with here.
Well, and you think about what he has been able to do with his wide receivers at Minnesota, for example, and you see what they're able to do, and you bring back basically that whole offensive line.
Yes.
If you include Mike Miranda and CJ Thorpe both as starters, count them as both as returning starters, you're bringing back 5 guys. And I think you're really going to start to see, you know, that run game can be an identity. You know, a running game in college football, as you see, it's not just saying we're gonna move the chains. You're saying we can get chunk plays out of this too. You know, it's Penn State's gonna have a real strength as far as that goes, and I think moving forward, I think they're gonna lean on that strength more and more. You're gonna get more guys involved, I guess. But if you're able to do what they were able to do against Memphis, you ride that. So I think you're gonna see the running game be a big part of what they do, including quarterback runs. I wanted to circle back, now that we're speaking of turning negatives into positives, so let's talk about the pass defense for a moment. And you know, the recognition that Tariq Caster Fields and John Reed, they are good players, they're not great players, you know. And I think that's just kind of calling a spade a spade. There's also an element here where there haven't been a lot of defensive backs in James Franklin's tenure here who can hurt you as an opposing quarterback, who have the ball skills to hurt you. Marquise Wilson, I think, is a guy who's got the ball skills to hurt you. And he showed in this game with a nice interception down deep in Penn State territory, a big play in this game. But I think that is part of what he brought to the table. And I think Keaton Ellis can get to that point too. And I think Joey Porter Jr. might be able to get to that point too. I think they might have a crop of this crop of freshman cornerbacks. And by the way, Daquan Hardy, who has been on scout team and stuff, I think he's got some of this too, where you are not just like saying, I'm going to be sticky on you. I'm going to make you make a play. They're going to make a play. I think this group of current freshman cornerbacks has a chance to change that dynamic a little bit. Okay. Yeah. We'll get beat sometimes. They're getting beat right now. Probably more often than they should. But I think that the group of cornerbacks working its way through has a chance to, hurt opposing teams and to make big plays on the ball.
I read one of those way too early previews of next season, and they talked about Penn State's defense, and I believe a lot of those, they just look how many guys are leaving, and they looked at Penn State's defensive backfield or defense in general and said, oh, so many guys are leaving. Well, sometimes I'm not going to go so far as to say addition by subtraction, but I don't think in any way they're going to be hurt by the guys that are leaving. And I'm going to throw another name out there, Jaquan Brisker, I think, could be another guy who could be a ball hawk in the defensive backfield. And I know he had the one interception that was kind of the free play when there was the offside.
Yeah.
But I think he has shown some of those skills, and another year in will be another year better also.
He does bring that, and I think that's a crucial element that Penn State hasn't quite had, really, since Franklin got here. If you're going to bend but not break – you need to create momentum swinging plays. And I think Penn State's defense, other than Micah Parsons just doing it every single play in this game, Penn State's secondary has not generated enough of those. And I think that's a fair criticism to say that if you're going to give some cushion, if the other team's going to kind of drive at will, you need to be able to just suddenly flip the position, field position.
Right. And in today's game, teams are going to get their yards passing the ball. You're not going to just shut them down completely with three and outs. But can you get a turnover to change the tide? Can you do, as you said, you know, the bend but don't break? Even if they do get their yards between the 20s, can you stop them once they get into the red zone so they're getting field goals instead of touchdowns? And, you know, Ohio State Clemson was an example of that. Ohio State dominated, but they couldn't get the ball in the end zone. They were settling for three. Huge difference.
And I think, you know, more credit goes to the defense than you might want to recognize sometimes. And Penn State's been able to do that. The next stage, I think, is creating some turnovers. And I think they've got more playmakers in that capacity than they've had in a long time. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to hear from James Franklin what he had to say after the Cotton Bowl, right after this.
Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light want to remind you that fall is the best season. Why? Because of football. Leaves. Fantasy football. Flannel. Beards. Tailgating. Oh yeah, and more football. Welcome to the best season ever. Grab some Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Cause it's time to get undomesticated. Beer. Labatt USA. Buffalo, New York. Always enjoy responsibly.
Hey, Penn State fans, here is your chance to take something off your bucket list. That's right, GoPSU RV is offering a full range of RV setups ready for a weekend of great tailgating at their Lions Den, which is the closest single-game RV overnight lot to Beaver Stadium. You can arrive anytime Friday afternoon. Stay until Sunday morning, avoiding all that traffic. Don't miss this unique opportunity. Go online to GoPSURV.com and reserve your RV today.
Looking for the perfect Christmas gift for the Penn State fan in your life? Then you have to go to 409tailgateclub.com and check out the Tailgate Christmas gift box, filled with their famous sauces and rubs and even a Tailgate Club apron. All in a gift box shipped directly to you. And for a 10% discount, be sure to use code KSN on checkout. That's 409tailgateclub.com, and don't forget to use the code KSN on checkout for a 10% discount.